tuned in to Pacific Underground, the Pacific Northwest's only radio show talking about the Asian Pacific Islander American communities. I'm your host, Jake Vermas, and October is Filipino American History Month, so I've invited a couple friends to help me unpack what this month is dedicated to and talk about our own experiences as Filipino Americans. So with me today are Angelica Lim and Mariana Holloman. Why don't we go around the table real quick and have everyone do a quick intro.
Magandang umaga.
Hey.
Hi, my name is Mariana, and I am a member of the Portland chapter of Gabriella.
And my name is Angelica Lim, and I also I serve as the chairperson for Gabriella Portland, which is a grassroots women's organization connected to Filipino organizing around women's issues all across the world.
All right, yeah, thanks for joining us today. And as I said, my name is Jake Vermas, and I'm the co-creator of the White Noise Project, which is a reading and discussion series, literary series, to amplify marginalized voices and writers of color. So next, I think we're going to introduce a clip for you guys to talk about some of the issues that we'll be going over later that introduces those. It's a roundtable discussion we had at an event, an arts and literary festival, last weekend, Saturday the 23rd, weekend before last, about Carlos Belloson's novel America's in the Heart. And just to set it up, we had Angelica with us, as well as Christopher Rose and Armin Tolentino, two other local Filipino-American folks. And so, Christopher's first going to read a clip from there, and then there's a little bit of roundtable after that.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yes, please.
He hurled his whole weight upon the white man, knocking him down instantly. He seized a stone the size of his fist and began smashing it into the man's face. Then the white men in the restaurant seized a small Filipino, beating him unconscious with pieces of wood and with their fists. He lay inert on the road. When two deputy sheriffs came to take him away, he looked tearfully back at his wife and child.
I guess part of the reason I chose that selection is because just thinking about today, a lot of these surface facts of what happened there are no longer the case. We repealed all the states that had anti-miscegenation laws. You know, marriage equality is the rule. But at the same time, it feels like not a lot has changed. I just wanted to open that up to you guys and what your thoughts were.
All right. I'll be honest, I don't want to talk about that. Well, I mean, what's interesting is, I mean, here's a place where he's using that as an example. What's interesting about reading this kind of today is the way the constructed Bulosan here engages with women throughout the text. Because here, he's using kind of this example of how bad it was, but there's this later example where he's kind of very taken with this white woman, but he doesn't come out and say it. So there's always a silence around sex and sexuality throughout this book, which was something, you know, when I read it 15 years ago, I really never noticed. But rereading it now, it was interesting how the construction of marriage works, and in some ways he's kind of earlier in the book it's kind of like marrying a Filipino woman bad. His brother he's having a sexual relationship with this woman in a village, but he talks about how she keeps hanging around and she won't go away, and it's like code, you know, they're sleeping together, right? And he doesn't want to come out and say it, but he also, it's constructed to say that she is the problem,
right? Like, it's like she's trying to trap him or something,
yeah.
Right.
And later when he returns to his home village and his brother and him go out and they meet some young women, they talk about, we need to get out of here. They're going to come and try to marry us. And so later he meets this white woman. He talks about, like, the way his gaze focuses on her body. So, you know, it's interesting how this is placed in here, because it's also problematic that he's constructing like a relationship as a white woman is what is ultimately desirable. And there are a few spots that happen throughout this text. As I was reading it, I was really interested in like a lot of the silences and what he doesn't say. He has sex one time in here, and it's arguably, it could be constructed as rape between on it. And otherwise, other than that, he has no sexual desire here. Like, it's silent except for those moments where he's gazing upon a woman's body. I always keep thinking about what is left out, what is not discussed. He doesn't want to come out and say his mom's in charge of the family, but it's clear there's that matriarchal structure that I think many of us are familiar with already in place, because she's doing work that's both gender, both masculine and feminine the entire time. And when these women that they meet at the club are going to go, you know, look to marry them, they go ask his mother what he's doing, not his father. I mean, there's a lot of these moments of, you know, women empowerment that it's not constructed that way, but to me it was a little more interesting to read it for the silences around gender, and understandable during that time, but also there, what are the implications of that? Because part of the reason why he's able to move to America is he's not expected to assume his father's role as patriarch of the family, because his mother is in charge of the family. That gives him the freedom to move to the States. And so if there is this kind of male expectation, which is often done, that now that his father is sick, he should assume his father's position, that's not the expectation. So because his mother is in charge of the family, he has the freedom to do that. And so when we have these moments where it's like Filipino man married to a white woman is bad, I wanted to contrast that with his other relationships with women here, because it was really interesting to read it through kind of the lens of gender this time around, as opposed to, you know, he's writing with a purpose, and this is very much this kind of activist literature, but I'm a little more interested in what it says about Filipino life and the relationship between Filipinos and each other, as opposed to kind of putting this hegemonic lens on it as kind of reinforcing that we always have to talk about it in these colonialist terms, as opposed to saying what does it say about Filipinos for themselves, as opposed to having to talk about those other aspects of it.
I love the direction you took that, because as I was reading it again, I was thinking about, yeah, well, how does gender show up in this piece? Because without being a historian myself, I recognize that when this book was written in the 30s, when it takes place in the U.S. in the 30s, in the 40s, this migration of Filipinos were all young men. So there weren't Filipino women around. So the women there were either white, or it seems like many Mexican women were sort of represented. And the representations of them often, from even the beginning, like you're pointing out, when he was a child, it seems like there's always some sort of woman, this Jezebel character that's there for trickery, to try to cheat someone. And you find it later, even when he starts becoming an organizer, there is a white woman that is actually like a narc or something within there, trying to marry and seduce Filipino men to get inside of their movement and try to destroy their pickets. Exactly, the strike breaker. So you mm-hmm. see that character, but then you also find it's that question of, do you have an Eve or a Mother Mary? And the other side is, these are the only roles women could play,
right,
in this
story. Madonna whore kind
exactly.
of
You're either
dichotomy.
A horrible person, mm-hmm. or you are this beatific, beautiful, pure, and they're always the white women. There are these beatific, pure white women that were there to just be like looked at as angels in some way, and like the source of grace. The one like seemingly really emotionally invested moment he has with a woman, doesn't go into all the details of what happens with her, but she's a white woman who says, I'm going to put you through college. I just need someone to care for. It could even be a dog or a cat.
Really weird.
And like when you read that, it's like, I just need something to care for. It's like, oh, okay, so this pity or like I could be saved by this person sort of comes up. So there's a lot of complicated stuff when it comes to gender roles in this piece.
I'm so glad this went this way. I was totally thinking of it something totally different. I think that the only thing that I would add to what you two were adding is that I think of it from a perspective of a feudal patriarchy, like, understanding. So if we understand the perspective of U.S. colonialism, U.S. imperialism existing in the Philippines, like, these trends of even activists or organizers, Filipino union activists and organizers, still are fraught with really problematic and really oppressive behavior, because in the Philippines, Spain colonized the Philippines with a very strict Catholic idea and sense of the Virgin Mary, Magdalene, like, whore dichotomy, right? And so that becomes this thing where I see it in a lot of, like, even current organizing spaces. Even I would broaden it out to, like, just Asian organizing in general. We still have a very weird relationship with patriarchy, with feudal patriarchy within organizing spaces. And I don't think that Bulusan was outside of being or exempt from that. The other thing that I was considering, and this is something as somebody who studied or women's studies, is like how Filipino men were seen in the 1930s and how even Filipino men have been gendered in a lot of ways to be like very effeminate. So I think about like the context of where Filipino men were in the 1930s, how whiteness kind of made or did not make Filipino masculinity in the 1930s, and that's something that came up for me too, particularly around this portion that you brought up.
The line that struck out to me, "You're always trying to take our women," you know, like, felt very kind of something that, you know, could be heard now. The multiracial couple in Olympia that was stabbed by a white supremacist because supposedly he was mad that a brown person was holding hands or being physically affectionate with a white woman. And even Bulusan falls into that trap of constructing his liberation that could only be achieved through, like, being in love with a white woman. I mean, made me uncomfortable the second time I read it.
Well, and I think about that in terms of the relationship to capital, right? And so we're talking about migrants and immigrants coming to the United States for a better life. So, like, love in that conversation and in that dialogue is a very different type of love. Because you're coming to not... Sure,
it's transactional.
Yeah, I mean, and like not to say that people didn't fall in love genuinely or still don't continue to fall in love genuinely when you migrate to the United States. But I think that when you move to a country that to have a better life, economics is like a deep like undertone of why you're moving. Like you are coming, and so you have all these preconceived notions of what.
All right. Well. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Pacific Underground here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we're talking about Filipino American History Month, and I'm joined in studio with Angelica Lim and Mariana Holloman.
Hello.
Hey.
And so the clip that we just listened to was from the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival that was held at the Jam Space. Sponsored by Apano and some other community members. And then we talked about this Filipino-American memoir by the author Carlos Bulusan. And so, yeah, just to start it off, I was just thinking we could talk a little bit about how we got here. Like, for instance, I was born in the Philippines myself in Quezon City near Manila. And even though my mother was from the provinces, Pampanga, and when I was three, we moved to San Francisco area. And then at six till I graduated high school, we were in Idaho because that's where my dad's family was.
How'd you end up in Portland?
Bad breakup. I was living in Eastern Washington, and it was a good place to land.
True story for lots of Filipinos in Portland. Bad breakups. Filipinos moved to Portland. Great.
Rain around me. It matches my mood.
Did we come to the radio to talk about your bad breakup?
Oh, yeah. Well,
here we are.
How long ago was that?
That was about January 2012. So almost 6 years.
And then how long was it before you met other Filipinos in Portland?
Dang, that's good.
Almost 5 years. I don't know. Okay. It's like a while.
Yeah.
Only till recently.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because we met because I used to be a bartender.
Right.
And so you were a patron at this bar, and we actually had no idea that each other was Filipino.
Yeah.
Until just recently.
We might have like mentioned it in passing, but never really
dug in.
Connected up. Yeah.
There's always like this weird thirst though when you see Filipinos like in Portland. You're like, hey, you're Filipino. And then people like, you're all of a sudden family. You're like, I'm not alone. Let me just talk to you. Let me tell you my deepest, darkest stuff about being Filipino. And you're
overshare
like,
overshare a little bit.
Yeah, we're Filipino nature to overshare.
Let's have food.
How did you end up in Portland?
After high school, I moved from Alaska. So I was born and raised in Alaska. And the coolest thing, one of the coolest things about the hometown I grew up in Juneau, is that Filipino culture was really at the center of a lot of the activities. I remember growing up in a really, really vibrant Filipino community. And so coming to Portland, Oregon was actually much more shocking in that people didn't know what a Filipino was. So that was in 2005, September of 2005. I thought this was going to be like a transitory city. I didn't think of it as super white at the time. I was like, oh, I'm just leaving Juneau, Alaska, and anything's better. But then as time went on, I think that there was just a larger void that started to needed to be filled. And so I came here in 2005, had a baby, Kai. Shout out to Kai. in school. And yeah, and so I think that like even the draw to wanting to be amongst Filipinos was like an impetus to Filipino organizing for me. How about you?
Well, I am a Navy brat, so I was born in Clark Air Base and also Pampanga.
Shout out to Pampanga.
So my dad was stationed there and he met my mom. Uh-huh. And I left the Philippines maybe after only a month or two. And shortly thereafter, maybe when I was about three, my parents divorced. And so I haven't seen my mother since, and I've been separated from my Filipino family my entire life. And so I really grew up outside of our culture, not knowing what it meant to be Filipino. And we moved around a lot because my dad was still in the Navy. So I lived in Puerto Rico for some time, Spain for some time, Arizona, and then I ended up here in Portland to go to art school.
Oh.
And this was in 2007. And this whole time, I was just rejecting my Filipino identity. And it wasn't until I was watching a documentary about the United States history, and about maybe 10 seconds was spent on the Philippine-American War, and I didn't know about it.
Right.
And that's when I started digging into like the real history of the Philippines, and I had this like massive desire to connect with the Filipino community in Portland, because even though I'd been here like about 9 years, I probably knew only about one or two Filipinos. So it wasn't until I sat down and had coffee with Angelica, who we met through a mutual friend, that I learned about Gabriela, and like I instantly wanted to join because I really just wanted to find that deeper connection to that half of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And I can see how we none of us really found any of that community until recently, because in Portland we're so isolated, and there's mm-hmm. really no one community place where,
oh, yeah, that's
where people get together very
yeah,
much.
For
I
sure.
mean, there's a lot in Vancouver. There's some on the west side, mm-hmm. like Beaverton. There's a lot of Filipinos in Southeast, but like there's no one sort of center.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have a little Manila here.
No.
Yeah.
Which, if there ever was one, it's gone now.
I think the dispersal of Filipinos in the Portland area is definitely by design. And so, like, the invisibility of Filipinos kind of becomes a myth, because there's actually, like, there's a good chunk of Filipinos. I was actually, like, upwards of 20,000 mm-hmm. of Filipinos
wow.
in the Portland, Vancouver area.
Really?
But we're talking about it being
no
outside.
Idea.
Yeah. And so, because it's also like generational too. We come from like the second generation where like our immediate connection is social media, but like mm-hmm. we have hella like immigrant and migrant community out here just mm-hmm. and who've been here for a couple generations. Like some of the people that we organize have like their families have like planted roots here, and so they're just not in the metropolitan hub of what we've sensationalized as like the core, but like
yeah.
they're here. We have to leave the Portland metro to really
right.
find our folks.
Yeah. I think it was when I went to the Philippine American 4th of July barbecue up mm-hmm. in North Portland. I was like, oh, look at all these Filipinos. There's so many here.
Where did they all come from?
Hillsboro. Shout out to Hillsboro.
Yeah. Yeah, shout out to Hillsboro. Totally. And so I guess that leads into another question I had, which is, as soon as I can remember it.
Filipino American History Month?
Yeah. So Filipino American History Month.
Hey.
Thank you.
Hey, October.
Yeah, I haven't had my coffee this morning, or at least not enough of it. And so, on the way here, I looked up Filipino American History Month, and apparently there's each year has a theme. And so for the 35th year, the theme this year is the 70th anniversary of the U.S. Bases Agreement immediately after independence by the Philippines. And so...
Heavy sigh.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave that for a couple of minutes. But like, did any of you guys know about Filipino American History Month before recently? Because I just found out about it like a year ago.
I found out about it last year, probably just after it ended. And I remember looking up a video about the White House celebrating. I think it was the first time they celebrated Filipino American History Month at the White House.
Wow.
And then today I wondered if they were celebrating it now.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah, I wonder.
Something to think about.
But when I found out, I was like, this is amazing. There's a whole month dedicated to us. Yeah. How did I not know about this?
Seriously.
I'm trying to think. I think my introduction was actually through Portland State University's Filipino Club, Kaibigan. But that was probably, I was also like hella privileged to be going to State University and have that be the introduction. So it was by way of academia that really kind of shed light, and I remember it being
shout out to PSU Kaibigan.
I know, shout out to all of them out there. Everyone was once a Kaibiganer in some point or another. but that was my introduction. I want to say four years ago, and then through that, I also was introduced through Portland Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines. So that's just but it's internal. Like, it's always been this conversation that we knew about it, but people don't, how is it that we have a Filipino American History Month, but we're the second largest Asian population in the United States?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How are we so huge and yet invisible? Like, that question always comes up for me.
It's very true.
Yeah, I think some of it has to do with colonialism, maybe?
Question mark? Imperialism?
Something to unpack later. But as far as the History Month goes, I'm always fascinated to meet Filipinos who grew up in places, who have a connection to place that has a longer-term Filipino community, like San Francisco, Southern California, Alaska, even Seattle. Like, if people grew up in Seattle and they're like third generation that I've met, recently in some of my trips to Seattle, that like blows my mind because, I moved here as a kid. And so, and in Idaho where I grew up, there really wasn't a lot of long-term community. A lot of people were recent arrivals like us. And, people keep coming because there's all this like professional, immigration now, as opposed to in the time of Carlos Belosan, which was when it was all like agricultural workers. And
so you got here when you were pretty young. Did you feel any conflict between your Filipino culture and assimilating into American culture?
Yeah, I think there was always some kind of resistance because I had vague memories of being around my big extended family, from when I was three, and being in a multicultural neighborhood in San Mateo, where we could go to Chinatown, or we could go to like Filipino restaurants and stuff and see brown people around everywhere. To being in Idaho, I think I just forgot it and erased it all just because, I don't know, trauma of assimilation. Was it like that for you at all? Or
I mean, I grew up not even acknowledging my Filipino side. And when you look at what's on, American television, we're not really that representative. So
right. Well, it's easier. That's the default, right? Is erasure.
Yeah.
I think there's like also, and I know we're going to touch on it later, but I think that there's this really weird internalization of like, we're not Filipino enough and we're not American enough. I mean, the conversation we were having right before we got on the radio was that, you know, I think there seems to be this mythical definition of what a Filipino is, but no one actually knows, like, if you're first gen, then you're Filipino, but then you're not American, you know? And so the hyphen, that conversation of the hyphen really comes about. But I think it comes back to, like, you know, the U.S. definitely occupied and occupies the Philippines in mm-hmm. such a way that, like, already the erasure of our identity starts from the motherland if we're not, like, the English alphabet is the primary languages spoken in the Philippines. So if that, like, I go to this all the time, like, that A is for apple, but there are no apples in the Philippines. Like, what kind of, like, weird, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, so.
Like, Christmas carols being played on the radio when there's, like, no snow. Yeah,
or, like, the education system.
Sleigh bells
over there.
Something.
Yeah, right?
Back to sleigh bells.
It's a trip. That's a trip. And so I think that the cognitive dissonance of our identities as Filipino, Phil-Am, and second generation really comes from, like, you know, diaspora and, like, being forced to migrate and have generations of forced migration and really trying to figure out, like, really just coming to our own that, like, we are just as Filipino and we should be, mm-hmm. you know, like.
Yeah, it's a struggle.
Yeah.
It's a struggle to claim your identity.
Absolutely.
I still struggle with it.
Absolutely.
And I've also met a lot of Phil-Ams, and I hear this repeatedly, of how they don't know the language. Like, their parents refuse to teach them the language because they wanted them to assimilate into American culture. And so you grow into an adult and you're like, why don't I know how to speak the tongue that my parents can?
Yeah.
And so I'm learning it now and it's like I'm stumbling through it, but mm-hmm. it just feels good to embrace the language.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if it doesn't come naturally, it's just there's something right about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Have you been back to the Philippines?
I definitely... not in a few years. The last time I went was when my grandmother passed away.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to Lola.
Hey, Lola.
Back in 2009, we took her back there, and that was the last time I went. But like,
oh, you mean she was here
a few times,
and you took her back to the Philippines
to be buried? Yes.
Oh, I see.
It sounds like you're overdue for a trip back to the motherland.
So yeah, I'm thinking about going soon, but there's some crazy stuff going on right now, so
I mean,
we'll get into that later too.
it's kind of
wild right
I'm
there.
Laughing, but it's not funny. It's
laugh crying.
When's the last time you were there, Angelica?
You know, I actually returned home to the Philippines after 20 years. So I went when I was 5, and then 20 years later, I returned right as the typhoon hit in 2013. So December 2013, I went on what we call as an exposure trip. That, like, so not the kind of, fun in the Philippines
you
kind of thing.
You didn't go to resorts?
We didn't do anywhere.
No,
no white sands, none of that. We actually spent time in Tacloban and a lot of the, like, typhoon devastated areas to really support the community out there. And we did some awesome, really great activist work out there. And that was, like, the first time I'd been back. And so that was the Philippines that I actually wanted to know. And I know that you're going to be doing that soon too, which is, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, we can talk about it later.
Yeah, that's exciting.
We have this running list of the things that we're going to talk about in the next 30 minutes.
We're bouncing around.
Yeah, our order is we'll just say we don't exactly adhere to the linear nature of this conversation.
Who needs it?
But
who needs it? Filipinos are robust. We can do what we want. We're Filipino.
Exactly.
I think it's really interesting that the Filipino-American History Month theme this year is 70 years since the U.S.-Philippines Military Bases Agreement.
Yeah,
that's
wild.
What an interesting thing to be celebrating.
I know. I'm trying to actually understand the context of it. Is it a celebration or like a denouncement of the occupation?
It's complicated, right?
Ah.
Like everything. But there was something that I read that said it's with that agreement, there was also a big allowances for Filipino immigration through the U.S. Armed Forces. And so this is before 1965 when they increased all those immigration quotas, the very racist immigration quotas that limited Asian immigration to just like a trickle from
like the
Chinese exclusion.
McDuffie Act in the 30s that reduced it to what, 50
right.
Filipinos a year.
Yeah.
And only men.
Yeah.
Only men, yeah.
Yeah. Which is such a different demographic.
But I've met a lot of people in communities that had a very, you know, connected to the armed forces and like around bases, like a lot of Filipinos in the Southeast, like Jacksonville, like Atlanta. There's a lot of sort of like service member family
Absolutely,
connected
yeah.
Filipinos.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. And it's another thing we can get into later, but it leads me to believe that, connected to the, that is about the number of Filipinos that voted for whatever. Actually, we don't have to get into that.
You just called Trump whatever. I'm going to use that from now on.
We can bury it.
Not today, Satan.
Just know that, I mean, yeah. Yeah, I think that like it's something that we always should address, but eventually we'll have to understand like the root causes, like exactly why did Filipinos vote for a person that is actually not in their interest? And I think there are some really genuinely, folks were like my parents. Shout out to my parents. I'm just gonna put you on the radio right now, like we're supporters, and we had a really intense conversation, but what came down to it is that they heard something from this current administration that was going to protect their children, and that I think comes down to like how a lot of Filipinos really feel about their families and their connection, and it ain't a pretty picture, and we know the truth, but like
it's not always rational
or it's like issue based, I think. Less about pro Trump and more about like, how do I take care of my family? And that's a hard pill for me to swallow as somebody who has seen not just this administration, but administrations before really be cruel and really not take care of the Filipino people, not only in the United States, but also in the Philippines. And, you know, continue to like treat the Philippines not so well.
Yeah, yes. I mean, they are deporting us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's something that we were talking about yesterday, too, is that like, there are over a million? I think there's
800,000.
800,000, yeah. Undocumented.
And then
Filipino immigrants.
I think it's 8,000 or 9,000 DACA youth on DACA.
So it's not just a Latin American thing.
No.
There's a lot of Asian American undocumented folks out there who are living in fear right now.
Yeah, and I think our community really has to come to terms with that. Like, I think that Trump's policies, Filipinos may or may not have internalized that doesn't affect them when in actuality.
Right. Yeah, families are being split apart right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
And people are being sent home to a place they don't even know is home because America is their home.
Yeah.
Right. They're completely assimilated. Like some of those Korean adoptee immigrants that like haven't even visited their homeland since they were a baby.
Mm-hmm. Or,
In case, so you're listening to Pacific Underground today. In case you're just catching us, on KBOO radio. Don't forget, if you want to hear more from our show, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. You can also find us on social media at PAC Underground. So check us out.
So I was thinking about the first waves of Filipino immigrants and a lot of the racism they faced and the policies that worked against them and how that's perpetuated. Like it's not as overt as it was in like the 30s, but it's still present. And I think about, you know, reading America's in the Heart for the first time, and that was the first time I really knew about the experiences that the first Filipino immigrants had when they came here. And I think what's really frustrating about all of that is, you know, the way that America treats immigrants, especially uniquely the Philippines, you know, as we know, the United States invaded and colonized the Philippines in 1898.
Oh, do we know that? That
history.
Was in my school history books.
Right.
Shout out to history.
Shout out to history.
Shout out to the schools.
And so, you know,
no school.
After America colonized the Philippines, you know, they implemented American capitalism and colonial policies that destroyed the economy, right?
Sure.
And so you had these people that were migrating from the Philippines as U.S. nationals because they were a colony. But they weren't told that they were going to be facing extreme racism, sometimes very violent racism, that they wouldn't be allowed to become citizens, to own property, and they better not touch the women of America.
Right.
But that was their innocence in the education that had been sort of forced on them.
Absolutely.
By the colonial administration. It was to train a generation of little brown brothers.
Yeah,
right?
We talked about that.
That
yeah.
was the sort of like code name, benevolent assimilation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or whatever. And
well, and then also we have to really like also root out like the policies that were implemented by U.S. imperialism in the Philippines were policies that made the Philippines not be able to self-industrialize. Mm-hmm. And so like this already right. pattern of like believing that the country that you were born in, you can't actually stay in because there are no resources for jobs, that, you know, that that wave of migration with nurses and teachers into the United States was on the backs of policies from like Marcos era. And then also we're talking about like, oh, what was the need in the United States? Let's fill that need.
Right.
And so now we're
low cost labor because
yeah.
Japanese people had been recently excluded mm-hmm. after on the backs of Chinese exclusion.
Right, right.
So we needed a pool of people that could be pushed around, basically.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, it's by design that like Filipinos also speak English. So like that kind of
right.
integration into the U.S. system is very, you know.
That's why we have a lot of call centers.
Yeah. And also like Filipino
Thanks.
Nurses. Shout out to Filipino nurses all
Filipino
in your hospital. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows a Filipino nurse.
I have a cousin that's a Filipino nurse.
Absolutely. I think all of us do. My mom was a Filipino nurse.
Nice.
Yeah. Filipino healers. Like, and that's like what we don't consider the backbone of this country. Like who are healers who takes, you know, Filipino women continue
right.
to like are not just Filipino nurses, but we're also talking about domestic caregivers and home care workers
mm-hmm.
and
overseas Filipino workers.
Absolutely.
And that's the gendered nature of the work, like Absolutely. Christopher was talking about in bringing it back to Carlos Belosan.
Uh-huh.
Shout out to Belosan.
shout out.
This is the kindest radio show. Like, shout out to the community. Shout out to my mom. Shout out to everybody who's ever gotten me here.
Yeah,
to
I don't
this
think
day.
We're angry, but we're not angry.
I mean,
have a lot of love.
I'm a little angry, but
yeah, no, I'm angry.
But I think
still
what
got love.
Yeah, hella love. I mean, What we know also to be true in like mainstream media around Filipina identity is that like we're like Filipino women are always seen as a commodity, right? I think bringing that gendered like identity of working or gendering work is that mm-hmm. like the mail order bride is not outside of the American imagination. Like
right.
like we still have people thinking that they can purchase Filipino women. And we still have people thinking, you know, from the Philippines or that, like, they can go over to the Philippines and I'll just pick me up a bride. You know, like, that's,
yeah.
like, a very common
Misconception.
I mean, I don't know. Misconception, yes. But it's also, like, it's still very prevalent. Like,
right. And it wouldn't be there if there wasn't some kind of, like, powerful cultural force.
Yeah. Yeah.
Behind it.
And also, like, yeah, I think that I think about this a lot, too, in terms of identity. Like, folks always make that trope about Filipina submissiveness or
mm-hmm.
Asian femme, Asian women submissiveness. And I'm like, have you ever met a Filipino? Have you ever met a Filipina? Like, ever?
You ever crossed somebody's mom?
I know. Have you ever forgot to put the dishes away when your mom worked two shifts? Nah. Like,
yeah. I remember Googling, like, you know, when you enter the search field and you start typing in mm-hmm. words, it automatically, like, pulls up a list of possibly related searches. I typed in, do Filipino women? And it automatically filled make good wives.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
And I got so mad when I saw that. And
That's
then also
messy.
when I Google image searched the city where I was born, it was all like red light district
Sex
photos.
Yeah.
Which are, you know, what are they called? They're like rest and
R&R
for
soldiers
US military.
During Vietnam.
Yeah.
That's how it originally like.
No, that's a very benign name.
Yeah, but currently
industry.
Even the base that you're going to visit in the clock bases and like
Subic,
absolutely. Like there are red light districts created and kind of preying off the poverty of Filipino women in the Philippines because
mm-hmm. they
what
have
are
no
the,
other choice.
Yeah, what are the acts? Like what are the choices? So now we're talking about like. The U.S. also having to, you know, maybe this is the contention around Filipino-American History Month. Maybe,
mm-hmm.
or just being, like, history in general is that it's been
we
so
don't
subsumed.
We don't want to open this can of worms up.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's like...
One question, you, Lisa.
Yeah, like Friendship Day and Independence, all of these words that actually have such...
Loaded
meaning or imposed meaning, mm-hmm. or actually, like, are lies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, yes. you know, like, but, we can call them lies, and right. that's okay, you know?
No, but I wanted to get back to the sort of connection with... climate change and poverty, yeah. sex trafficking, because mm-hmm. talking about some of those typhoons, I read stories where people had looked up missing family members and found them. They had been like sort of kidnapped by pimps from refugee camps to go to Angeles or Subic for, you know, the brothels and stuff.
Yeah.
And but wasn't Gabriela sort of started originally to bring awareness to that kind of gender violence.
It's, I mean, Gabriela is connected to the larger National Democratic Movement and in the Philippines. And really what it's trying to say, like, we're linking that the liberation of the Filipino people is not without a layer of understanding women's oppression as well. And so I think talking about climate justice, we have to also point out that it's not, you know, natural, like, disaster, but it's also very people-made. And
right.
who is... predominantly affected by particularly like U.S. consumption, U.S. capitalism, are third world nations. We're looking like at the devastation in Puerto Rico and Mexico
yep.
and in the Philippines constantly as typhoons continue to hit. I think that what people don't think about, they're like, okay, well, that typhoon hit, so it's good. But like the aftermath of typhoons, of hurricanes and earthquakes, falls on the people to really...
The impact never ends.
Impact
right?
never ends. You're still rebuilding. New Orleans is still rebuilding in a lot of ways, and we don't talk about that, you know. And so with that in mind, what happens is that women and families and their children become the most vulnerable. People lose parents. People have to find jobs that are outside of their means. Like, people have to go to Manila and, like, take up some work that doesn't see fit for them, but they have to actually provide for their families, and that is a very gendered thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what we're seeing happening in Puerto Rico is totally parallel to the Philippines.
Absolutely.
Because, one, if you don't already know, they were part of the Paris Agreement purchase for $20 million in 1898, where the U.S. Attained the Philippines, Guam, and Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. So Puerto Rico is a colony
right.
of the United States.
Absolutely.
And
they're
they economically citizens, suppressed
but not
it.
Really.
And so things were already crumbling before the hurricane hit.
Right.
And they were already having like mass forced migration because the economy was so bad there. And it ties back to what's happening in the Philippines too. Mm-hmm. Like an average of what, 6,000 Filipinos leave the country every day for work.
Yeah.
To send
intense.
Money back home.
Yeah.
Right. And get open to all kinds of abusive situations like... some of the domestic workers in Hong Kong being forced to work without air conditioning over the summer.
Absolutely.
Like,
even here.
Middle
so,
East?
Yeah.
Even here.
Washington, D.C. Gabriela, there's actually an organization of Gabrielas that are traffic teachers that were actually promised a better life in the United States. Their trafficker, Isidro Rodriguez, a Filipino, brought them to the United States, brought them to Washington, D.C., left them there undocumented without jobs.
Wow.
He promised jobs. And so these teachers are organizing right now. And they're some of our closest, like Kasamas or Kababayans, but are still struggling to make ends meet here.
Mm-hmm.
And then also provide for that overall goal, which was to send money back home or remittances, right?
Right.
And so... talk about like how those U.S. policies are still intricately tied and like, yeah.
And
yeah.
how much of the Philippine economy depends
on
remittances.
Remittances, that's correct.
National
yeah.
policy.
Yes.
Which,
yeah.
How much
exactly
of the
sustainable.
GDP
I feel like
make
it's
up?
A large 30%
of the GDP
yeah.
is from OFW.
Yeah. So like
that'll
end
well.
It is in the like we were talking about the Philippines' number one resources, and people like talk about gold and zinc and things like that, but like people.
It's people.
It's people.
Right.
We outsource our people to the rest of the world. And then that becomes kind of the trend. And that goes into the trope of Filipinos being so subservient when in actuality, like there's a...
They're trying to survive.
There's a, like, yeah, forced migration. I think...
Yeah, I mean, like, why did our parents leave?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why are we here?
Why are we here?
Yeah.
I know my mother left because the conditions there, she just wanted to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mine left because the conditions, the economy, it's hard to get a job without
right?
connections to the sort of like corrupt, you know, old boys network and also martial law that a lot of people left because of the political situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do your parents feel about, you know, having to leave their homeland to come here? Or do you ever talk about it?
Well, we did end up going to my dad's homeland. So like, in a way, it's like a mixed bag. But yeah, my mom said that she's lived in Idaho longer than she lived in the Philippines.
Yeah.
So it's a complicated thing.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And you find community wherever you go. I mean, you can go to any town. You know, just about any town above like 10,000 people in this country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you find out through the network, there's going to be a Filipino party somewhere with lots of food.
Oh, yes.
That's
shout
all
out
we
to
do.
Filipino food.
My first job after college, I moved to this little town in Georgia for work, and I didn't know anybody, but I met a Filipino at work, and he's like, hey, we're having a barbecue. Come on over. Mm-hmm. And so...
I mean,
met a bunch of friends that night.
I think that breaking bread in Filipino community is one of the like the ways in which we take care of one another. Like, I think that that's like core to our values of community mm-hmm. and like collective. Like, I think that that there's a lot of care and concern that comes with Filipino culture. That like, you know, we take care of one another. I think food is an invitation to that.
Big part of that.
Yeah.
I mean, we call strangers Titos and Titas.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're
everybody's
automatically
your auntie
family.
And uncle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a weird sort of intimacy there that
sure.
that isn't forced, and you know, that's also in other Asian communities, but like for outsiders, it's not always easy to get your head around mm-hmm. when
yeah.
you see it for the first
time. I really love that about our culture. You don't find that really outside of Asian and Latin cultures. You know, you don't have like white people greeting each other as aunt and uncle on the street with
right.
whomever they meet, any strangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or African cultures. Mm-hmm. I think they do that too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, on the flip too, you just get disciplined by every single auntie
That's
and
true.
Uncle in your block, and I'm like, oh, they're talking about me.
Yeah.
I messed up, and I heard about it from seven aunties.
The network knows. Right? Yeah. No, my Indian yeah. friend was telling a joke at her stand-up routine at the EPALF a couple weeks ago. Shilpa, shout out to Shilpa, about growing up here and getting a call from her mom after she went out to Target or something like that, dressed, you know, in summer, sort of laying all hang out, kind of, and about her outfit. She's like, Mom, how did you know? And she's like, Auntie so-and-so told me.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I called you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of how we roll.
Yeah, no secrets. None.
That's hilarious.
Is there anything else we... put on the that you can think of that we meant to get to before we
we're almost up, huh? Oh, heck. Well, for Filipino American History Month, I know that we're doing a couple we're gonna do a couple things with Gabriella. Part of how we started was we were launching on March 8th and a couple years ago, International Working Women's Day. And it's cool that we're talking about identity because I think a lot of women who came to Gabriella were trying to look for find that community. And as we talked more and more, we found that we were very different and yet very rooted in the same like understanding of not feeling Filipino enough, but also not feeling super American enough and being stuck in this like weird, funky diaspora. And then finding out like even more digging deep that like, it's like the root problems of the Philippines. Like we're talking
right.
about like U.S. imperialism. We're talking about capitalism. And we're talking about like Spanish influence of feudalism. Like all of that really
and
like...
toxic masculinity.
Yeah, absolutely. Feudal yeah. patriarchy you know, is real, you know?
Catholic,
oh,
Spanish
yeah.
upbringing.
Oh, all of that has like a direct influence on how we've all come to our Filipino-ness. And so Gabriella was kind of formed from that need for community, but also understanding that that need lives completely outside of us and that we have to really address problems and issues in our community. One, because we know how, like we have to really trust ourselves to be able to organize within our community, but two, like to connect more Filipinos together so that we know that we're strong out here
mm-hmm.
And that we can really address our problems and also contribute to, you know, our kababayans back home who,
right.
you know, who are also under intense oppression and like, what does it look like to really link with them and be with them and like
mm-hmm.
organize around issues that affect us and also in the Philippines.
And that's brilliant that you've been able to both combine the food community aspect of
mm-hmm.
it with actually doing doing community work and base building work and solidarity work. And that's kind of an extraordinary privilege that past generations haven't been able to do
with
the ease of travel, sending money, and the ease of organizing, you know, thanks to the internet.
Yeah, I think it came out of necessity. I will say that, like, I think that that as, you know, things just kind of arise out of necessity. And part of that is, like, the brunches were like, okay, this is the this is one way that we can start having conversations. So we had a conversation in Vancouver with a bunch of Filipino women from my mom's church. And that was, you know, profound because, like, we were able to talk with migrant and immigrant Filipinas about their experience. And then we started talking to other second generation Filipinas, all from either school or places, like, coming as artists. And so I say all of that to tie it that we're going to come back to our roots and host a Panay brunch here at the end of the month. We're looking at either October 22nd or 28th and really wanting to invite all Filipinas in the Portland community to come through and really, like, bring your mom, bring your auntie, bring some Filipino food. And we want to break bread and really, like, get to know one another, but also figure out how we can, like, help each other, you know, rise and organize here in Portland.
Support each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's happening. What else is happening this month?
Well, if you want to learn some Tagalog.
There it is.
We have English Tagalog lessons every month, hosted by Gabriela and the Portland Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines, otherwise known as P-Chirp.
Chirp, chirp, chirp.
And the next lesson is October 13th at St. Pinoy's Bakery.
Shout out to St. Pinoy's.
St. Barbara.
Yeah.
St. Barbara.
Yeah. Shout out to Bob.
Bob. Shout out to Tito Bob.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been to one of those when they were holding it at Kuya's Cuisine.
Yeah, they're really fun.
And it's a good time.
Yeah, I'm trying to brush up now as much as I can since I'm leaving for the Philippines in about a month. So I want to, like, be as prepared as possible.
Yeah. Right. And this is probably a great time to talk about your trip. Is that the exposure trip that sort of Angelica was mentioning earlier?
The exposure trip that Gabriela sends members on. I think, you know, usually one happens in the summer and then one happens in the fall.
Depending
on what's happening. Mm-hmm. But in the month, I'll be leaving for the Philippines for expo trip. And it's going to be the first time I've been back home since I was born there.
Oh, wow.
And
so
it's
20-something years.
You know, it's funny that the Filipino American History Month theme is celebrating or acknowledging the U.S.-Philippine Military Bases Agreement, because we were actually going to be mobilizing around ban the bases at the base where I was born.
Oh, wow.
So it's going to be pretty wild.
That seems fitting.
I'm really looking forward to, like, you know, going to the Philippines and, like, seeing my people and, like, breathing the air and just, like, being there. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, and I know you probably heard this from other people too, but it's not just the humidity, but it's something that just hits you when you walk off that plane that it's hard to describe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah, and the other important thing about these exposure trips is that the work we do here, we understand the conditions on, like, an abstract level, but it's important for us to go and see them in person and, like, be with the people that we are trying to serve.
Yeah. Right. Our biggest encouragement, that's why I was like, when was the last time you went back? Because we encourage you, you should come with us. We should all go to the Philippines. Yeah. So we're going to go next summer, too.
Yeah, everyone's welcome.
Yeah. Okay, and we would love to just,
to start saving up.
Yeah, it's time to save up. The tickets are fairly cheap, 500 something right now.
Sometimes you get a pretty good deal.
500, 600 before.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where we have an image painted by U.S. imperialism about the Philippines, and then we get to actually see and go and be with organizers on the ground and actually see, like, the fuel and the resistance that's happening over there. And I think that it's an invitation to everyone to just like be introduced to the Filipino people and the Filipino movement.
You don't even have to be Filipino to
go. We have hella folks who are not Filipino who have really, like, taken up the Filipino struggle. And so
it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Shout out to the allies.
Shout out to allies.
And so, but I was curious before we sort of switch to something else, if you've been in contact with any of your relatives.
Shout out to Facebook.
Would not have been possible for
you to crop Facebook.
I've been in contact with, I retract that shout out.
Sorry.
I've been in contact with Atita and a couple of titos, and I plan on meeting them.
Oh, that's
so
great.
After the work I do with Expo is done, I'm going to connect with relatives in Manila and travel to the province where my family's from in Samar and meet my Lola for the first time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I think I'm going to come back just like a crying mess. I'm just going to come back a totally different person.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to come back a crying mess. I think I just got emotional.
I mean, I don't blame
like
you. I get a little emotional thinking about it too. So
we can all cry on this radio station, really make an imprint on
people. This might be a good time to, sign off and just have our ugly cry together.
Oh, I'm so into that. No one can see this.
I enjoy talking with you guys. I feel like we could do it.
Thank you
more,
for having us.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna just note everyone should visit GabriellaPortland.org. Keep up to date. We might do other Filipino American History Month kind of events. We would really just want to encourage everyone to learn about their history and learn about
all of it.
Yeah, I
went to one of your feasts that you guys held with the eating with your hands.
Yeah, Kamayan.
Kamayan feast. Yeah, that was good stuff.
That was fun.
Everything was on banana leaves.
Yeah. We should eat like that always.
Yeah, support our work. Visit our website. Also, speaking of Expo, we are fundraising for that trip right now, and there is a donate button on our website. Go ahead and smash that donate button.
A
dollar.
A dollar.
Okay. Well, yeah, you heard it from them, and so... tune in next, though, for our next Pacific Underground episode on Friday, October 27th at 11 a.m. when we'll be talking to musician Matt Dorian, and he'll play a little bit for us, too. We're excited for that. So coming up next is Threshold Shift, followed by Flashpoints, so stay tuned. And just another quick thanks to our guests, Angelica Lim and Mariana Holloman.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Thanks, as always, to KBOO Community Radio for the studio space and all the love and support. And to our two listeners, thanks for listening.
Shout out to Filipinos.
Salamat.
Salamat.